Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is the Agenda Podcast on the Blood Red Channel, taking a bite-sized look at some of the big Liverpool FC talking points.
Hello and welcome back to the Agenda Podcast here on the Blood Red Channel. I'm your host, Edward Kay, and I'm joined today by Kiefer McDonald. And yes, instead of just talking about him for 5 minutes on every podcast and apologising for bringing him up again, we are just going to do a podcast on Jude Bellingham today. I think it's basically impossible to scroll down any sort of Sky Sports or Twitter news feed now without seeing anything about him and Liverpool. But I think the latest thing I saw was Sky Sports reporting that he is going to be Liverpool's number one summer target. I mean, I'm not sure that's the biggest scoop in the world. I think we all knew that. But it certainly seems that way, at least. And Liverpool, obviously normally known for keeping transfers under wraps and being quite tight-lipped about things. Even Jurgen Klopp's not really denying it in interviews now. He seems to answer questions about it quite a lot. How far on the, you know, your likely to unlikely Bellingham to Liverpool barometer, which seems to change every day, how far along are you, Kiefer?
Well, it's certainly an interesting one, isn't it? Because as you say, you can't go 5 minutes without kind of hearing his name associated with Liverpool or Jordan Henderson or Trent Alexander-Arnold in some capacity. So, you know, kind of everywhere you look at the moment, Jude Bellingham's name is there. In terms of Liverpool's likelihood of signing him, I think, to be honest, as everyone knows, I think they've got a good a chance as anyone. You know, if you think the main competitors are probably Real Madrid, yes, potentially, you know, you've got the financial kind of capacity of Manchester City if they want to have a say in the conversation. But reports yesterday that Manchester United have kind of fallen behind in that sense. So, you know, you would kind of think it is potentially a two-way shootout. Like I say, potentially a three-way shootout if Manchester City are going to get involved. And why would they not after everything, you know, we've all seen this winter from Bellingham in Qatar. But, we've done some long reads about him. You know, Paul Gorse did one earlier this week and, basically just saying how far Liverpool's interest dates back. And obviously they've done a lot of the legwork. And, you know, he came to Kirby as an under-11s player for Birmingham on a two-day trial at the academy then. It was at that point, his parents decided not to relocate to Merseyside. So I think Liverpool have got a good chance as anyone, really, because, you know, they have done that groundwork and there has been previous interest there. And obviously it has just happened that he's kind of exploded, you know, over the last kind of, you know, what it feels like the last 10 days. Obviously he has done really well while he's been in Borussia Dortmund, but this has really been, you know, the making of him, you know, if you want to compare it to a greater extent of kind of Michael Owen at the World Cup in 98. Like goal scored against Argentina, it feels like that. You know, this is Bellingham's moment. So, I think Liverpool, you know, they'll be there or thereabouts in the conversation. And I think now with kind of everything that's been said, you know, with Trent Alexander-Arnold, with Jordan Henderson, and all the kind of jokey kind of relationships that they've been having, I think you've only got to have a stronger feeling that maybe, you know, it's natural. They are players. They are humans at the end of the day. Obviously, some conversation, you know, is going to be had there, and you know, hopefully, Liverpool can get it over the line and kind of, you know, pick the likes of Real Madrid. And obviously we'll touch on factors that might persuade, you know, Liverpool to maybe be in the driving seat, obviously later on. But yeah, I think they've got a good chance as anyone.
Yeah, you've brought me straight on to something I wanted to ask you about, which is all the, obviously, the videos, the images you're seeing of Trent and Jordan Henderson, you know, sticking to Bellingham like glue, seemingly. A lot of people on Twitter, obviously, talking about Agent Trent, Agent Hendo. They really do seem to be getting everyone's hopes up, but how aware of what they're doing do you really think they are? You know, they're whipping us up in seemingly on Twitter into a bit of a fever pitch now, especially with recent interactions. You know, they see the celebrations. Like, how much do you think it factors into their thinking when they're doing things like this? How fans are going to perceive it?
I think obviously there is an element of they do know what they're doing. You know, in terms of, you know, one recent example is obviously the photo that Trent Alexander-Arnold put on Instagram last week, I think it was, or Twitter, or both of them, kind of, they're having a stroll around Qatar on one of the days off. I think it was after the Wales game, after they obviously qualified for the round of 16. And, you know, it was, I think the caption was chilling with my bro or something like that. And, you know, whilst it can be harmless and obviously a bit of fun, I think obviously, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold probably knew what he was doing when he clicked the share button. But obviously we know even before Liverpool's interest has been, you know, really, really concrete in terms of, you know, the past maybe, I don't know, 6 to 8 months where his name has been, you know, really the forefront of every transfer conversation. We know that obviously last year at the Euros and prior to that, when he made his England debut in late 2020, Henderson obviously had taken him to his wing, under his wing, sorry. And, you know, there had been a relationship established between the two. And I don't think, you know, I think for Henderson's part, I don't think any of that is to maybe gain at club level. Maybe now that relationship might, you know, turn into a bit more, you know, a friendly kind of close-knit one in terms of, oh, are you joining Liverpool kind of thing. But I think at the time, you know, Henderson is, you know, I think maybe people are seeing that now, but he is obviously a model professional. You know, he's probably been the most, off the top of my head, and he's probably been the most successful English midfielder at club level over the last, you know, 5-6 years. And, you know, you only have to look at what he's won with Liverpool and kind of how integral he has been to obviously Champions League and Premier League winning sides. So I think as you know, Jude Bellingham coming into that, you know, set up at St. George's Park, there's no reason why he wouldn't gravitate towards a Jordan Henderson, because we know his eagerness to kind of, you know, propel himself to the heights of world football. And, you know, to do that, you do need the discipline and the kind of commitment that Jordan Henderson has displayed over his career and especially at Liverpool. So, you know, for someone like Jude Bellingham, he's the perfect, you know, mentor, really. But like I say, obviously the dynamic of that relationship kind of as the transfer links kind of intensify, obviously will alter and change. But I don't think, you know, I don't think Henderson would be doing it. You know, I don't think he's doing all this because, you know, I just listened to something there that Bellingham did with the Lions Den segment they do every day. And he just said the celebration between the two was completely unplanned, completely natural. You know, that's not something you'd plan. Oh, if you set me up in the World Cup, we'll do this, we'll do that, which is, you know, it just kind of shows that the relationship that is there is a natural one. It's two lads who obviously love football and obviously are proud to represent the country. And obviously, given the feat they achieved the other night, you know, by assisting one another and obviously scoring in the round of 16 of a World Cup, you know, it's every lad's dream, really. So, yeah, I think obviously there's similarities there, as there will be with all the lads in the England squad. I think that's one thing to point out. It is certainly in my lifetime, it's probably the most close-knit England squad there has been. You know, everyone looks like they enjoy being there. And, you know, you hear the likes of Steven Gerrard, Frank Lampard, Gary Neville, Wayne Rooney even saying that during their playing careers, you know, England wasn't the place it once was. You know, players of different, you know, sides would sit on different tables and eat their meals, you know, separately. It was all very like, you know, Manchester United here, Liverpool there, Arsenal there. Whereas now, you know, there's plenty of them who seem like best friends. So I think that obviously plays a massive factor. But like I say, there's no reason why Jude Bellingham wouldn't want to interact with, you know, someone. And again, even someone like Trent Alexander-Arnold, who has experienced a similar kind of trajectory. I read something this morning that Adam Lallana said, and he said that, you know, Bellingham's rise to stardom reminds him of Trent Alexander-Arnold's, in, you know, in terms of, you know, bursting onto the scene, if you want to call it that, at the age of 18 and kind of winning every honour in the game by 24. So, you know, as well as, you know, maybe having a bit of a joke and a laugh there, I think there's certainly plenty for Bellingham to learn, which is understandable.
Yeah, as you mentioned there, I'm not sure that celebration was planned. It looked pretty natural, and if I'm honest, I'm not sure Jordan Henderson's got quite a prolific enough record to be planning celebrations when he scores goals. But, you know, were Bellingham to decide to join Liverpool and come and play alongside Jordan Henderson, obviously we've seen how well that balance has worked with them two in the England midfield. How well do you think he'd fit in at Liverpool? Does balance even come into it with a player who seems so individually so, you know, perfectly balanced? He's got composure beyond his years. He just seems to have everything. How well do you think he would fit in at Liverpool?
Oh, he'd fit like a glove. And I think that's obviously a testament to kind of his skill set that he's acquired and obviously demonstrated. And obviously, particularly in kind of recent weeks with England, you know, we've seen him play that role, that kind of retracted role of the striker in kind of a number 10. We've also seen him playing in a two. We've seen him play on the left. And obviously the other night he played alongside Henderson in front of Rice in a more free-roaming, you know, number eight kind of role. And we saw, you know, he was prolific down the left, wasn't he? Obviously he gets the assist there for Henderson's. But, you know, just his intelligence and, you know, his ability to pick up positions and half spaces and drive with the ball. I mean, he's got everything that you'd want from a midfielder. And I think of the other night was, again, the reason it was quite telling is because, you know, playing with someone sitting, you know, in the sense that, you know, Declan Rice did, was maybe a similar capacity. He would play at Anfield, you know, you'd have Fabinho behind him. So to kind of almost, what's the word, to kind of almost have that kind of dress rehearsal almost, or audition in that left-sided number eight role, which, you know, you look at Thiago, who's playing there at the minute, he's 32, I think, going on 33. So, you know, he's not going to be around forever as good as he is. And obviously we all know that he does struggle to play games back to back to back. And obviously the injuries that he has, you know, that have, you know, plagued his career almost. So, yeah, I think, you know, if you could pick him up, and it's the same for Rice as well. I know he's not the topic of conversation, but he's another player you could drop into this Liverpool side and you think they would improve it tenfold. And that's not a sly on Fabinho at all. But, you know, like I said, Bellingham, he's just got everything. He's just imperious, isn't he? When he gets on the ball, he's someone who gets you off your seat. And like I say, his skill set is so versatile. Obviously, there's a story about why he wears number 22 in terms of, what, you know, dating back to his Birmingham days. You know, they said, you know, he's a number 10, he's a number 8. And if my maths is correct, he's a number 4 as well. So, you know, he can play all those kind of different positions. And like I say, for the money as well, which has obviously been talked about, you know, 150 million euros is the kind of latest report from Germany. Even, you know, if he was 25, you'd probably argue that it's worth it. But the fact that he's 19, and you've arguably got a midfielder there for 15 years, and if you don't, you know, the resale value is going to be high if he was to leave in, you know, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 years, or at the end of a contract or whatever. So I just think it makes absolutely perfect sense. And, you know, like I say, he certainly hasn't lowered his chances of securing a move, as he with kind of the displays he's put on. He's scary, as I said to earlier. You know, you speak to people about Michael Owen and that goal he scored against Argentina at France 98. You know, I can only imagine this is similar to that. Obviously, with social media, the kind of hype is obviously intensified. But, you know, for a 19-year-old, you know, a teenager to do what he's doing and kind of drag England, as he has done, into the knockout stages at times when, you know, they haven't been great. I think he's just everything you'd want in a midfielder. So yeah, I think you'd slot in perfectly to this midfield, to the Liverpool midfield, and obviously he offers goals as well, which is something, you know, you can argue as lacked at times in recent years, with Liverpool maybe taking a more conservative approach and kind of allowing the front three or front four maybe to kind of take that burden. But, you know, if you can get goals from midfield, goals and assists is what wins you games at the end of the day. So exactly, you know, everything.
The Agenda on the Blood Red Channel.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, interesting that you mention how well he plays with Declan Rice as well. Obviously, current ownership situation, it probably wouldn't ever happen at present, but depending on where Liverpool are in the summer, who knows if they go out and buy Bellingham and a Rice, but, you know, that is being a bit ambitious depending on takeover situations, obviously. And as we mentioned, at present, reports are Dortmund are expecting somewhere between 100 and 150 million for him. Could Liverpool at present afford that fee and wages? Obviously, you look at when Nunes came in, it was Mane had left, and that was what allowed us to bring Nunes in and give Salah that bumper contract. Do you think it'd be a case of Liverpool being able to bring him in without letting anybody else go, or would somebody have to go to make way, do you think?
Well, you think that, you know, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita are, you know, in the final now 8 months of their, or 7 months of their Liverpool deals. You know, they expire at the end of June. So from the 1st of July, they are free agents. You know, from the start of next month, they can both negotiate with overseas sides on a pre-contract agreement. So I think now, if you were to kind of hedge your bets, you'd probably suggest that both of them, you know, will be walking out of the Anfield door at the end of the season. And obviously remains to be seen kind of what happens with James Milner. But if I was to take an estimate between Oxlade-Chamberlain and Naby Keita, that's easily, you know, £250,000 a week in wages spared if they are to, you know, leave and not renew their deals. You know, might be slightly more than 250 million, but sorry, 250,000 a week. But, you know, that is probably the benchmark that they're probably both, you know, taking home about, you know, just 125 each, maybe a bit more, maybe a bit less. But you know, that's a wage that would more than cover what Bellingham is going to be earning, you know, especially I think at Dortmund, he'd probably be on what, 60, 70 at the minute at most. I mean, he's on his first contract. He signed as a prodigy from the Championship. He's not going to be on much more than that, if at all, anymore. So I think in terms of wages, I think, you know, you can almost sort that in-house. I think obviously the ownership situation and kind of what is happening obviously does have a, it obviously does have an impact, because, you know, if there is going to be a full sale, but, you know, FSG have said, you know, Mike Gordon said it is going to be business as usual. And that obviously relates to January. And we'd imagine further down the line that relates to the summer as well. But as you say, you know, reports coming out of Germany this week, 150 million euros, which obviously is a lot. But as I said earlier, Madrid have said that they won't risk the economic stability of the club to pursue Bellingham at that 150 million pound mark. So that would, you know, on whether that is them trying to bluff Dortmund, who knows? But if you look at the finances behind it, you know, having signed Tchouaméni last summer, having signed Camavinga the summer before, having signed Hazard 2 years before that, they're currently doing the Bernabeu extension up, the renovation, sorry, which at the moment is, I think, down as about 750 million euros. And I think the reports are that they are asking for another loan, which in a worst case scenario would take the development cost just over 1 billion euros as a worst case. So reports in Spain are saying that they are going to be asking for another loan, which would suggest, and if you kind of put the pieces together, why they you know, they're not willing to sacrifice the stability of the club. Again, whether that is them bluffing, who knows, but, you know, it all, does kind of all add up. You have got to think, we're only just, whether people like it or not, we're only just coming out of the coronavirus pandemic and kind of the impact that it's had on clubs in the last, you know, 2-3 years. You know, transfer windows, okay, maybe the summer was the first one, but they're still getting back to normal. It's still a volatile market, you know, especially for selling clubs. So if Madrid are showing their hand and saying, you know, we're not going to pursue that top kind of echelon of 150 million euros, it obviously gives Liverpool a free run, if you like. Like I say, obviously Manchester City could probably cough that money up, so could PSG. But, you know, from everything Bellingham said so far, it would sound like, you know, a club with the kind of values and philosophy as Liverpool has, in terms of, you know, he's said on record a few times that he wants to give people memories and you know, he doesn't want to just, you know, play for money and not that, you know, playing for PSG and Manchester City couldn't, but if you think, you know, which club kind of epitomises, you know, making memories and kind of ingraining yourself into a fan base, it's Liverpool Football Club, it's playing at Anfield, it's, you know, it's being the face of those big European nights. So I think when you look at it that way, and like I say, the potential departures of Navigator and Oxlade-Chamberlain, add a potential James Milner to that, who we obviously signed the 1 year contract in the summer. Again, who's probably on, I imagine, maybe have taken a pay cut in the summer, you know, maybe something of £100,000 a week. So, you know, you have got the wages there to kind of offer Bellingham a lucrative deal. And the thing is, he's not going to be coming in on, you know, £250,000 a week. If you think how much it took Salah to get that, you know, that was his third contract at Liverpool. He signed the initial one, then he signed one in 2018, and then obviously got the extension last summer. You know, players have to work their way up. They're not just handed these lucrative deals. The same with Van Dijk. So I suspect, you know, he's not going to come in on a massive wage. So Liverpool can afford that. It's just kind of who else is in the market. But like I say, it sounds like the player would be up for the move, which is obviously the first and foremost important thing of any transfer. Dortmund, it seems, have maybe accepted that. I think the CEO said last week they wouldn't be handing out any gifts to Liverpool. But, you know, if he was to join a Premier League club, Liverpool will be the preferred one. So it sounds like, you know, everything is kind of coming together nicely. Obviously, this Winter World Cup seems to have worked in Liverpool's favour with you know, if you want to call them agents, Henderson and Alexander-Arnold. So I think, like I say, there's plenty that aligns, and it kind of says that Liverpool are the strongest currently. You have the strongest hand for Bellingham. But obviously, as we know in football, a lot can change in the next six months or 7 months until kind of that summer window does open. But, you know, like I say, there is plenty of lining which would tell you that Liverpool are in a very, very strong position. And obviously, as I touched on at the top of the show, obviously they've done their due diligence in terms of, you know, inviting him to the club as a under-11s player on trial. Obviously, the family decided not to relocate in the end, which is obviously a decision that has, you know, been proven to be the right one. You know, would Bellingham have been the star he is now if he had to work his way up for a club like Liverpool? Would he have been handed the same opportunity? Maybe, who knows? But, you know, certainly can't have any regrets about turning down Liverpool. But obviously, those at Anfield and those at the academy were obviously big fans of him. And obviously now, you know, 7-8 years later, they've obviously got the opportunity to finally get their hands on him. And you've just got to hope that the kind of disturbance and kind of the change in the guard with obviously a new sporting director coming in, you've just got to hope that that doesn't disrupt any of the, you know, the foundations, maybe, if you want to call them that, that have previously been laid out. You've just got to hope that it's as smooth as possible come the summer.
Yeah, you mentioned a player there that brings up something I wanted to speak to you about. Naby Keita, obviously, when Liverpool agreed the transfer for Naby Keita, obviously they agreed it basically a year in advance. Do you think there's any chance Liverpool will be looking to get something tied up in January ahead of him maybe joining the club in the summer? Obviously, Dortmund have made it clear that he's not going to be leaving until the summer. But do you think there's anything to be said for Liverpool, you know, trying to get something tied up in January with all the competition around trying to get him?
Potentially. I mean, the other side of that is, as you would have in a normal World Cup, is that January is then going to be the spike, arguably, where he's playing, you know, he's at his peak price, if you want to call it that. He'll obviously been 19 years old. He will have played, you'd imagine, obviously, will probably play against France this weekend. You know, you feel like if England do get past France, they've got as good a chance as anyone as reaching the final. You know, they'll probably play a team like Brazil. But they've got as good a chance as anyone as kind of winning the competition if they do knock out the reigning champions. So you think if he was to be the poster boy that comes out of the World Cup as having helped England win their first World Cup in 60-odd years, his price is going to be astronomical. So maybe that's not the best way to negotiate. Whereas I'm sure Liverpool wouldn't mind paying a premium to secure his services like they did with Naby Keita. It might be when his price is at its absolute peak. So maybe a summer deal as well. And I'm sure, you know, we're not stupid. I'm sure there will have been talks. I'm sure there will have been inquiries in the summer. You know, Jurgen Klopp said during the summer that the only problem with Jude Bellingham was that he isn't for sale. Whether that means Liverpool had inquired previously, who knows? Interpret those comments how you want. But, you know, I would be very surprised if there hasn't already been phone calls between Liverpool and Dortmund over Bellingham over the last, you know, 6, 7, 8 months. As I say, he's been a Liverpool. He's not someone who's just come on the radar with a lot of the top clubs. You know, we know that they were all aware of Bellingham whilst he was playing in the England youth setups, you know, whilst he was, you know, making a name for himself at Birmingham City during the 2019-20 season. So whilst it would be, you know, brilliant if Liverpool were able to pull off such a deal, I would just have reservations again for Dortmund. Why would they, for them, they'll want to keep him as much as anyone. He's got a contract till 2025. They've previously said they still have hope of keeping him. I don't think they would bow maybe in January. Again, if he's coming off his peak and then he has another brilliant 4 or 5 months, you know, leads them to a cup success or whatever, you know, they go on a run in the Champions League, surely that's going to be, again, more money in their pocket. So why would they take a reduced fee now? But who knows? Like I say, I'm sure Liverpool will be exploring every possible scenario because, in the sense that Naby Keita won in 2017, obviously that caught everyone by surprise at the time. It seemed like there was no impasse in, you know, the negotiations had reached an impasse in terms of, you know, I think they wanted 70 million at the time and Liverpool kind of said, look, you can have him for another year, we'll pay just over 50. And that kind of worked for both parties. So obviously there is that kind of nous of being able to, you know, pull off a deal and obviously they will be aware of it. But I just think it's like what people said in the summer, would they do it then? Well, why would they? You know, if they're going to commence a bidding war in the summer, which is the, you know, kind of the ultimate aim for Dortmund, you know, you're going to want him to play and kind of have another 6 months at the top and then obviously kind of see where his fee lies and kind of what his end of the season looks like. But, you know, I'm sure his price won't fluctuate too much, put it that way. I mean, we you know, what he's done in the World Cup so far has been absolutely unbelievable and it's not something new. I mean, can't say I watch loads of Dortmund, but whenever I've kind of watched in the Champions League in those big games against Manchester City, he's always held his own. He's always performed for England. So, you know, it's not like people were just basing their kind of opinion of him on the World Cup. They had been aware of him beforehand and they will be aware of him after. And they will, teams, you know, up and down the country and around Europe will be trying to kind of steal a march on one another in order to kind of line up that deal. We, like I say, you just got to hope that kind of everything Liverpool have done so far and kind of the situations around the ownership and the situations around players leaving, you just got to hope that they kind of all work in Liverpool's favour and they are able to kind of strike the iron and secure a deal.
Yeah, it certainly seems like things might be in Liverpool's favour at the moment, but who knows what will be you know, the situation in summer when that inevitable bidding war does start. But that's all we've got time for on the agenda here today. Kiefer, thanks for joining me. Hopefully that's enough Jude Bellingham content to scratch everyone's itch until we inevitably talk about him on the next podcast anyway. But until then, from now, from me and Kiefer, it's goodbye for now.
You've been listening to the Agenda Podcast on the Blood Red Channel.